Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and Donovan Darius.
You know, it's got to be cool. I know my man here, Donovan Darius, you've accomplished a lot of cool things in your life, but to be able to come in a studio like this and people are playing your highlights, brother, that's got to be a pretty cool moment for anyone. I'm Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey on vacation this week. Donovan Darius, the former Jacksonville Jaguars safety, joining me today on the program for the next couple hours. How are you, Donovan?
Man, I'm doing good. So you asked the question. Yeah, it's still funny. And I mean, I was one of those guys, I guess, that every year I was in the league, I was always in awe that I was in the league. I mm-hmm. wasn't that guy that was like, I deserved it, or, you know, I'm just that guy. But to still hear about it, to still talk about it, to be a part of it, it's still mind-blowing for me.
Yeah, and you came off as one of those guys who never took it for granted that you were part of the NFL, and I think that's part of the mentality you need in a locker room. You need guys like that. I know I was talking, John Osher from Jaguars.com was in here with me yesterday, and we were talking about some of the different positions on this team, the guys who need to step up, and we'll talk about that transition from year one, year two, year three for these guys and for you and what you expect out of guys as they get 2 and 3 years into the league. But we were talking about Allen Robinson specifically and him being the type of player that he feels like the type of guy that every day is about, how do I stay here? Mm-hmm. You know, what do I need to get better at so that I can stay here at this level and take my game to the next one? And that's the type of guy you love to have in a locker room.
Well, I mean, you do need that, because again, that the whole phrase of being humble and hungry is what you need to kind of walk with in order for longevity. People always say, well, what did you do to play 10 years? And what is the key to success in this league that stands for not for long? Well, it is that mentality of being hungry and being humble, understanding that every day they're trying to replace you with somebody cheaper, somebody younger, somebody faster, somebody stronger, whatever the somebody is, they're trying to replace you. And so when you have that mentality, it keeps you pushing forward. And so I remember when I was playing, we had guys that are not marquee name guys, but those guys, they had a work ethic that when you watched them and you saw what they did, I mean, it kept them around. I mean, Vince Wilfer, Wilfer, he was a guy who just worked his behind off. And, he was one of those guys. Another guy, Alvis Whitted, on our team, the wide receiver, he was a guy that, I mean, as soon as the off season was over, he'd mm-hmm. take about a couple weeks off, and all of a sudden he's back out there. Mike Logan was a guy. Carnell Lake was a guy. I mean, these guys, when you look at them, you look at the successes that they had. TJ Slaughter, Aiken Adell, these are guys that, yeah, you may know some of them, but when you look at their offseason, you look at their work ethic, you look at their preparation, those are the guys that it's not a secret to success or why they're having success in their lives, you know, on the field and off.
I know we've had you in here before, and we've talked to you about some of the things that you did throughout your career and the lessons you learned as you went throughout your career. You had the opportunity early on to play a year. You mentioned Carnell Lake. How much does having a veteran like that come in, and just, like you said, his work ethic, the way that he approached the game, how much does that affect a young player in the league?
It makes a huge difference, and for a couple reasons. Number one, we talk about being hungry and humble. If you're able to come into the league and you realize, yeah, I'm here, but I still got ways to go, then one of the number one things you'll do is gravitate to that type of veteran leadership. You'll look to someone who is where you want to be in terms of accomplishment, and you'll find out, well, what are they doing and what can I do, to add to what I do? And so, again, you're not losing your personality. You're not losing your identity, but you're gravitating to what they do, and you're making it a part of your own. And so having guys like that, you know, Carnell, and just every day I'm talking to a guy who was a Pro Bowler at corner, Pro Bowler at safety, mm-hmm. His footwork, I mean, as a 6'1" or 6'2", 220-pound guy, I mean, his footwork was incredible, his coverage, his knowledge of the game. And so I was able to soak all that up. And in that 1999 season, I mean, just to be able to play alongside of him and then develop him as a friend on and off the field was tremendous asset for me.
I know we got a lot to get into today. I want to talk to you about some of the issues going on in the league. Mm-hmm. Chris Borland's been a story all week, and I know a lot of people out there may be done with the Chris Borland story, but you're a former player, and I wanted to get your perspective on a guy that young deciding to step away from the game. Greg Hardy signing that one-year deal with Dallas. As a guy who's been in an NFL locker room, how do you respond to guys who come in with some of those issues away from the field? How welcomed are they into these new places when that kind of thing is going on? I want to talk to you about all those things, but I learned something new about you every time you come in or I talk to you, Donovan. And you walk in today, I had no idea you're a Manchester United fan, or do you just like the feel of that jersey?
I like the feel of the jersey, man. I had my couple years of soccer experience, World Cup experience, and Charles Samuel Lewis Middle School up in Blackwood, New Jersey, in seventh and eighth grade. But no, I like soccer. I get a chance to work with Creeks Athletic Association out there with all their, you know, all their premier pre-select and everyone, and work with them on their speed and agility, and just really the mental part of the game. And so I enjoy it. I loved the World Cup last year. And then also I just like the colors, man, and the way it fits, yeah, the way it feels.
You're in the black and red, the Man U jersey over there. Look, I know you got a lot going on. Every time we talk to you, you got a lot going on. You got a camp coming up tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about that, how families here on the First Coast can get involved with that.
I mean, most definitely. And again, you know, to everyone out there listening, I appreciate you guys tuning in. We're going to have a good time over these next, you know, couple hours. Feel free to definitely reach out, send us a tweet, you know, call in, you know, get some questions answered, you know, just engage. That's what we're here for. But as far as the camp, one of the things I try to do, especially around spring break time, is afford and give the opportunity to parents and kids to get back re-engaged with a program that's all about character and athletic development. And so during this week of spring break week here in Duval and St. John's County and Clay County, I get a chance to hold these spring break football camps. They were 3 hours. I did one on Tuesday in Fleming Island. I did one yesterday in Ponte Vedra. And so tomorrow, my last one of the week, and people can still sign up. It's for kids ages 6 to 14 years old. They get a chance to come out. It's a three-hour event. It'll be at Plantation Park. Again, we just go with speed, development, agility. We do offensive circuits, defensive circuits. We have football games. I mean, again, it is a fun, fun experience. I love it. You know, I always say, great players don't make great coaches, but I just happen to be a guy who I love teaching, encouraging, and I love being around the kids. And so if someone wants to get involved and just kind of get signed up, they can. There's still slots open. They can go to my website, DariusNextLevelTraining.com, or they can even download my free mobile app, which is Donovan Darius Next Level, and they can kind of sign up there. And the cost is only $35 for the camp tomorrow.
So check it out, DariusNextLevelTraining.com. If you're on spring break and you're looking for something to do on that last Friday of spring break, is you're tired of the kids running around the house and driving you crazy, let them drive Donovan crazy.
Let me tire them out. Let them come on out there and let them tire me out. So they get a chance to race me. We get a chance to do a lot of stuff, man. It's amazing what you can pack into 3 hours, and they walk away understanding the different, you know, different aspects of life and how they can apply what they learned that day into other areas.
I know I've had the opportunity to talk to a bunch of fans here doing this show and having the opportunity to do it that have participated in these kind of camps with you, whether it be this one or the multitude of other things that you do to allow the public to reach out to you. And, you know, your passion for the game of football and trying to teach people to do it the right way is incredible. I know I told you a couple weeks ago we had our first fan spotlight Friday.
Yeah, that was funny.
And Duval Doom came in with us in studio for a couple hours, and afterwards we went and hung out with him and had a few beers, whatever, just chilling. And he was sharing stories about some of his interactions with some of the former players and the current players, and your name came up, and he was like, yeah, I went to one of those camps that Donovan was doing for the kids, and, you know, I'm standing over there, and my kid was like, hey, Dad, why don't you run the 40? And I was like, no, I'm not running the 40, and Donovan heard me. And Donovan was like, everybody's running the 40. And you made him run it. I think he said that you ran it backwards with him, but it's an interactive experience every time I know with you out there. And I know that the kids and the families, at least that I've had the opportunity to interact with that have had that chance, are very appreciative of it. And I've never heard a bad word about anything that you're doing with these camps.
Well, I appreciate it. Again, the whole purpose for me coming back to Jacksonville after I finished my time, you know, in the league with the Raiders and Dolphins in 2007 was exactly that. It was a comeback, not to come back as Donovan Darius, the professional football player and the bigger hitter and all that. It was a comeback and understand that this is the place that God has purposed for me to be. This is where I played in the 1996 Gator Bowl against Clemson, where we beat them 41-0. I mean, I got a chance to experience Jacksonville before it was even professionally. You know, I got a chance to come here as a team. And so my time here was great. My family is here. And this is, I feel in my heart, where I was planted to be. And so everything from my training organization, working with youth and, you know, schools and organizations, I get a chance to also have my foundation where I do life camps here. And so I know we may have some mothers that are out there listening as well. Just to kind of let you know, through my foundation, on May the 9th, which is a Saturday, I'm having one of my Donovan Darius, you know, a foundation life camps. And it's for mothers and children. It's totally free. The children have to be ages 5 to 18. And the title of it is Understanding and Appreciating the Power of Mothers. And so on that four-hour event at Everbank Field, we'll have 2 hours of basically empowerment sessions where I have people coming in, giving positive words to the mothers and talking over different, you know, just kind of different areas of motherhood, building them up, encouraging them. And we'll be doing things with the kids. And then at the second half, we'll all go out on the Jaguars old practice fields where we'll get a chance to have a lot of fun family activities, competitions, tug of wars. I mean, you name it. We have a great time. It's totally free. Breakfast, snack, and lunch is served. It's all free. So if somebody wants to get involved with the foundation support-wise, they can. Basically, contact at DonovanDarius.com. And if somebody, a mother, wants to attend, I think it'd be great. It's limited to the first 100 families that sign up. And they can also sign up, you know, by basically going to my website, DonovanDariusFoundation.com.
Appreciate it, Donovan. We got 2 more hours with you, buddy, and I can't wait to get into the football side of things with you. The Fan Feedback Spotlight, we ask Jaguars fans every day, what drives you? Today we're asking, with Donovan being here, who should be the Jaguars' first defensive player put into the pride of the Jaguars? Every time we bring up this question, Donovan's name gets thrown out quite a bit. I saw that you already reacted on Facebook to the question with your own answer of Tony Brackens. So you can go on either Twitter or Facebook, the Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday, or on Twitter at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Donovan Darius, or at 1010XL Tyler. Who should be the Jaguars' first defensive player put into the pride of the Jaguars? That's what we're asking you, Jaguar fans, today. Let's get into some of the issues around the NFL right now. Not necessarily attached to the Jaguars. We got a lot of Jaguars to talk today, but we want to talk with Donovan Darius while we have you here, as a guy who's been in these NFL locker rooms, about the situation with Chris Borland stepping away as early as he did, and Greg Hardy, and bringing in a guy who's facing those kind of off-field issues into a different NFL locker room. We'll talk about that with Donovan Darius next here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Rolling along on a Thursday edition here of Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey on vacation. I'm Fat Tony. Donovan Darius, the former Jacksonville Jaguars safety, alongside our fan feedback question of the day in honor of Donovan being in studio with us. Who should be the Jaguars' first defensive player put into the pride of the Jaguars? I always debate between two or three guys. I was telling you, Donovan, there's this group of guys in my head that are all kind of together. I think I know in the end where my vote would go, and we can get into it a little bit later on the show. I know you already weighed in on Facebook to the question saying Tony Brackens, and I know playing behind that guy must have made life a little bit easier for you here.
I mean, he was as they say, like a freak of nature. I mean, to be as big as he was, as strong as he was, he did a lot of that stuff down even at Texas, you know, in college. And so to come here and to have that immediate first step. I mean, the only guy that I know after him was Dwight Freeney. And, of course, you know, shout out to Syracuse University. Not basketball right now, but, yeah. But he had a tremendous first step, which a lot of times you don't see that in these big guys. And so he'll get off the ball, and talking to him at different times, you know, he'll just be telling me how he'd be setting guys up. Like, he'll go upfield real hard. Then all of a sudden that offensive lineman gets to shoot upfield, and then he goes underneath. I mean, and he was great with his hands. And so I just think when you hear in the league, and they're always talking about, well, where does the game start and end? They're always talking about in the trenches. I mean, we were fortunate to have, of course, Big John and Stroud And those guys are great, were great together, and they had great moments individually. But I just think that what Tony Brackens was able to give us, I mean, was something that you won't find with that size. I mean, think about what J.J. Watt is doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, Tony has some injuries here and there, and J.J. Watt may have a more consistent motor, that's really apparent. But he gave us what J.J. Watt gives the Houston Texans. I mean, they throw the ball out to the flat. Tony Brackens can pick it off. I mean, those are some intangibles that I think that why I would put him up, on the wall. Not to mention, I think everybody else did great, but I just think that he was one of those guys.
Yeah, and J.J. Watt may go down as an all-timer. That's a guy who's had 20 sack seasons now twice in his career. It's incredible. But, thinking back to those Jaguars teams, obviously we talk about that run from 96 to 99 and into 2000 for this franchise. It's incredible when you stop and think about it, how many answers they're still trying to find.
Mm-hmm.
For guys that they had on that team during that time, they're still trying to find. We're hoping that Jonathan Cyprian's going to be that safety that can come in and be the down-in-the-box guy that you were. We're still looking for that next Tony Brackens, the guy that can get after the quarterback, who is the threat on that defensive line at the defensive end position. They've been trying to replace him since he left. Jimmy and Keenan, they've never found answers outside of Jimmy and Keenan at wide receiver. And you guys were all together for that run in 99 and into the early 2000s, and they're still trying to find the answers now 10 years later for a lot of those same positions.
Well, I think when you look at, and it's not so much, of course, we look at, we look in the past to find out, okay, what were the lessons, what were the values, and how can we apply them now? I mean, I know for the city of Jacksonville, probably one of the most disheartening thing is that we had success early, and we have not had that consistent success since then. But when you look at what, the chemistry of the team was when we back then, we had young guys that came in at key marquee positions, but we had veteran guys that were here that had already done it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with the Jaguars, and I know that everybody gets tired of hearing, oh, they're young, but that is a byproduct of having a young team. It just means that if this guy over here starts making young guy, inexperienced mistakes, and then all of a sudden the next guy over here starts making it, then what happens is you're having these guys make the same mistakes at the same time, which has a very, very, negative effect on the outcome. So, but for us, what we had that leadership. We had that core guys. We had a guy who already seen it before. And so therefore he's able to talk to a young guy and steer his energy and steer his focus and kind of shorten down that learning curve. Last year, like I said, when I started working with the Jaguars, and some of the safeties and turning mentoring them and watching film with them and just kind of teaching them and working with them a little bit, I'm talking to a whole group of guys who have never seen it at the level that I may have seen it or even half of the time that I've seen it. And so it's new to everybody. So imagine I'm sitting there talking to guys and it's new to them. And this is not a knock on them. It's just a reality. Then you can understand why these situations are happening versus having a guy in there who's a 4-year guy starter who's seen the 70 or 80 plays a game over a 3-year period of time. And he's with a guy who hasn't seen it yet. There is some transfer of information there and experience. But when that guy's coming in, the guy coming in is, in a situation like myself, I'm coming in as a retired guy. I'm not around you all the time. And so the coaches have to, it puts a lot of onus on the coaches to do a great job of getting these guys up to speed. But at the end of the day, nothing can substitute, experience in plays on the field.
No, it really can't. And it was, you could feel that, it was palpable watching this team last year where I think the team feels good about what they have at wide receiver. I think the team feels pretty good about some of the young pieces they have on that offensive line. But when you're asking these groups to work together as a cohesive unit and you go back and you watch them, it's one guy makes one of those mental mistakes on a play, and it doesn't matter if everyone else does their job. That mental mistake causes that play to not work. And it's you have to have some kind of experience and be able to draw on something. And unfortunately, in that locker room last year, they didn't have a whole lot of veterans that they could go to and say, well, what happened? When they got to the side, why did that happen to me? What can I do to correct that kind of mistake? They didn't have that experience on the field with them last year. maybe a bunch of guys transitioning into year two and three can draw on their own experience from year one and two and start answering those questions on the field, and those mistakes start going away.
And I think that's what, in essence, the management, the coaching, and the players, the organization as a whole is looking forward to now. I think the situation with free agency and the guys they brought in, as well as the draft, and then also with the guys that already been here, it can go one of two ways. You know, the one way that it can go is you have these guys that were year one, year two. They're going into year three. So they have those experiences, you know, that it takes to now, you know, have enough understanding of what's going to be expected of them from a calendar standpoint, from a season. And so now these guys are at a level. Then with the free agency, you know, within the same situation, you have guys that are coming in who, yeah, they were not necessarily all starters, but they, at the end of the day, the common denominator is that they've had plays, they had experiences, they've been around good organizations, and they're bringing that here, you know, as well. And then you have the draft where you have new guys coming in. Mm-hmm. And so now these free agents and the guys that's transitioning second year, third year, whatever, they're able to now transfer that information, you know what I mean, to them. And so that scenario right there, I think, is the common core to the Jaguars really turning this thing around and really getting over the hump of being inconsistent. Now, the other way is you have these guys coming in from year two to three, you know, and they still ain't get it yet. I mean, they're still trying, but they don't have a solid understanding. It's kind of like not working harder, but working smarter.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have knowledge and experience, you're able to work a lot smarter, and it doesn't mean you have to give more effort. And so if these guys have not learned those lessons, if the coaching staff and, you know, has not given them the keys to the transition, and then you have these free agents coming in, and now they're here like, okay, well, I'm coming to an organization, these guys don't know much, then it puts a lot of emphasis on them. Then you got rookies coming in, they don't know much. And so then it's the other way. So there's two ways it can go. My desire is that it's the former, that now everybody's growing, everybody is learning, everybody is on the same page. I think that's the way it's going to go, and it'll be exciting to watch this journey.
I know in the NFL there's always young players on your team. I mean, you got to draft every year. You're bringing in young talent every year to these rosters. I know you never played on a team where they were putting 8, 9, 10 rookies between both sides of the ball on the field at the same time, which is what the Jaguars were dealing with at times last year with a bunch of really young guys.
When I was in Miami, when I was in Miami, you know, everybody likes the story of the Red Sea. I mean, it was really like the Red Sea parting, like almost every play. You know, to all those Miami fans out there, hey, man, don't hate me. I mean, it was what it was. They hand the ball off. I mean, it was nobody on the interior. I mean, every play, it was like the guy was in the secondary. And that was another example of having young, mm-hmm. undeveloped guys out there. I mean, there's no proper run fits. There's no proper angles. There's nothing consistent that you can build on. You know, it's one day, one play, you're doing one thing. The next play, you're doing something else.
Right.
And you can't expect anything. And so now you're trying to do a whole lot. And when you're trying to do a whole lot in a systematic defense or offense, that never works.
And what was your, I mean, in that experience for you, you were very much a veteran player at that time. How frustrating is that for you, where you know what needs to be happening and you can tell them 1,000 times, this is what you need. Do you remember that play where it worked? Do that. You know, and you keep telling them that, but it just doesn't work for them.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. It's just like a parent who has taught their child over and over and over some principles of communication, of respect and all that stuff. And you just see them just going out and just bumping their head against the wall every single time because they refuse, you know what I mean, to do it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And being there, and we had times, you know, in Jaguars here a couple years where, you know, from a defensive standpoint, we were not as strong as we should have been. But at the end of the day, it can be frustrating. But what you have to do as an individual is you have to now have servant leadership. That means I got to lead you, not in front of you because I'm telling you, hey, do this. You got to do that. Come on, y'all. I'm hollering. No, that ain't going to work. You got to be able to have the personal skills to walk to a person and say, man, well, listen, at the end of the day, what are you trying to accomplish here? You know, how can I help you? How can I support you? And then from the bottom up, you grow. And we actually had situations like that where during the season we weren't doing well. And I remember a couple of times – and one in particular. We were going against Baltimore that week, and I just went to every defensive guy in the locker room before we went out to practice on a Friday, and I said, you know what? You know, this is when Stroud, John, and, you know, everybody was here. And I said, you know what? This is what I need you to do for me today. You know, when the ball is snapped in every practice play, if you're a defensive lineman, I need you to sprint 10 yards towards the direction of the ball. If you're a linebacker, I need you to sprint 15 yards. If you're a defensive back, I need you to tag off the ball carry every single time. That's what I need today. Can you give it to me? I'm going to give it to you. And what that did, it put a sense of accountability, not to the player, to the coach. Get it done. Run to the ball. But to each other. I said, I'm going to do it. I need you to do it. Can you do it for me? And so when we got out there in that practice, you could see certain guys wasn't used to it yet, but then they did it. They did it. They did it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the energy level. So when we went out and played Baltimore that Sunday, we had, I think, three fumbles. We had two forced fumbles. We had we recovered, I think, one of them. We had interception. And all that was attributed to the fact of a mentality that was set by a veteran player or a servant leader on the team saying, I got to go first, and will you follow, and can we do this together? Those are the type of things that you need, consistency and consistently, in order to change the mindset and what's happening. You know, there is no shortcuts to success except sweat and hard work.
I know you're getting the opportunity, at least last season, to sit down and break down film with a young safety in Jonathan Cyprian. A lot expected of that young man as the strong safety for this football team going forward. I want to talk to you a little bit about your experience with him, maybe how some of the stories you just told relate to him, and maybe your role trying to get him to that point with this team and this roster. We'll talk about that. Jonathan Cyprian going into his third year now in the National Football League. As we continue along on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today, I'm Fat Tony, former Jacksonville Jaguars safety Donovan Darius, alongside here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, the fan feedback spotlight question of the day today. What Jaguars defensive player should be the first to be inducted into the pride of the Jaguars? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at Donovan Darius, at 1010XL Tyler, and of course on our Facebook page at Jaguars Today. You can get involved, give us your feedback. We'll get to some of those answers here in about an hour. Donovan Darius alongside Mike Dempsey on vacation this week. He'll be back with us on Monday. He's chilling with the little one as he's on spring break this week, and hope they're having a good time. I know I'm having an awesome time sitting here talking football with you, Donovan, and you've had the opportunity now to be in a room with Jonathan Cyprian, who, look, I talk to fans every day, and that's a guy upon whom expectations are out the roof. Mm-hmm. Selected at the top of that second round. It's a position that everyone feels is really important in this Gus Bradley defense. A lot of hype for him coming into the league. 2 years in, he's had some really good moments. He's had some really bad moments. But you've had an opportunity to sit down with him and talk on several occasions, breaking down film. What are your expectations for him as far as the lessons he's learned, do you feel like, from the first 2 years that he can carry into year three?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when we get a chance to sit down and talk, one of the first things that I noticed that we talked about was, it was kind of like what I was saying earlier about not working harder, but working smarter. And you really can't work smarter unless you have information. And so the fact that he didn't have anybody around him, you know, to build his comfort into the league that was consistent in what they did, then he had to not only do his job, but a lot of times he was trying to make up for the job of other people as well. And so when you do that, it's a hit and miss situation. And so working with Jonathan and just kind of talking to him and Josh Evans, and those guys, it was really just allowing them to see themselves, you know, from different perspectives. You know, number one perspective is what they've actually done. And then the other perspective is actually the purpose of the defense, the purpose of the technique, how do you apply it, and then the results that it give you. Now, granted, when you're young, you just feel like you can run through a brick wall. You don't want to be patient. And so what I've seen in his growth from year one to year two is that he's having that growth from a standpoint of experience. He's becoming more patient in what he does. Now, the same common denominator is that his supporting cast has not been as consistent. So it causes him to be put in awkward situations. And so I'm looking forward to, you know, now I know they brought in a guy, Sergio, someone who has not been so much a starter as much for a long time, but he has more experience. And I think just having him battle Josh Evans and having Evans back there with Cyprian, I think it's going to really kind of cultivate that backfield a little bit more and try to create a little more stability.
I know you're a first-round pick, Donovan, so you understand the expectations and the pressure of coming into the league and having those that heaped upon you from the moment you walk into the door. Cyprian in much the same situation from the time that he got here to Jacksonville. Now, a lot less talent on this team when Cyprian walked in compared to when you came in, but you understand something about the expectations of playing that position when you're that high a draft pick. How do you feel like he's handled that through the first couple of years?
I think it's been up and down. I mean, sometimes I've talked to him and, you know, he'll admit, I mean, it's tough. And what's tough is when you have such high expectations. And one of the things I love about, you know, I mean, the young man is that he puts the team on his shoulders. He wants to win. He wants to do well. He wants to make an impact. He wants to get to the play as fast as he can. He wants to stop the offense from scoring. So he has the attitude and the mentality that you want for someone back there. Now you have to do what you have to do is you have to support, surround him, you know, with the right cast that's going to actually allow him to do it. But I think from a pressure standpoint, he's handling it very well. We always say that the eye in the sky never lies. And that just means that the film is always on. And the sacrifice that he has to make and the decision that he has to make is, will he focus on being consistent in his stuff, or will he still have, or anybody have, the Tarzan mentality and try to do everything? Mm-hmm. Well, when you have the Tarzan mentality, that eye in the sky shows you not being consistent in your very fundamentals of your technique and of your position. But if you have that mindset in the beginning, I got to do my job. I got to master my techniques and my fundamentals, and I got to lead my team by example, which I feel like he's been trying to do a great job of. It's that way that they're going to now, you know, they're going to breathe from that. They're going to move from that. And if they don't, guess what? The organization will get somebody else. You know, they'll get another person in here to support and be around you.
You know, you've been out of the league for a handful of years now, Donovan, retired in 2007, so it's been 8 years since you played. When you look at the safety position in the NFL, when you watch games on Sunday, how much do you feel like the expectations upon that position have changed just in the last 7 or 8 years with the passing game is more prolific than it's ever been in the NFL. The stress on trying to find that free safety, which is a position that is near impossible to find. There's no depth at that position across the NFL right now, but it's so important to have a guy that can do that sideline to sideline thing. And that really wasn't a stressing point for NFL defense even 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think with the change of the offenses now, it does call for you to, you know, in management to look at guys who can kind of do it all, guys that are athletic to be in space and athletic enough and strong enough and quick enough and powerful enough to be in the box. I don't think there's really, you know, the box safety and or the free safety. I think because in defenses nowadays with them spreading you out, you can be everywhere. You can be quote unquote considered a box safety, and now you find yourself covering a number two wide receiver in a slot based off of their alignment, their formation.
They're
and
trying
everything.
To get you in space if you're a box safety.
Exactly. And so I think that one of the things I learned from Carnell when we were playing is the importance and the necessity to be well-rounded in your fundamentals. I mean, backpedaling, tackling, you know, reading defenses, route tendencies, combination coverages, I mean, down and distance tendencies. I mean, when you can master those things as a process in mm-hmm. your mind, it allows you to be in the right place at the right time. And I just think that nowadays, with, you know, with the advent and the growing popularity of all these nuances on the offensive side, it's taken away from just some of the fundamentals for guys, especially on the defensive side, to just focus on the basic fundamentals of their craft.
When you watch, maybe not what Philadelphia does, because their idea is more, you know, the quick screens, get the ball to these fast twitch guys mm-hmm. in space very quick. But when you watch teams that try to run, you know, the option Do you just salivate as a guy who did what you did in the league, the idea of being that guy who's setting the edge potentially for a defense and that quarterback deciding to hold it? You know, do you wish you could play in today's game and just pop one of these guys?
Actually,
a couple times?
You know what? I get asked that question all the time. Actually, I don't want to play in this era. And the reason why, because I either be suspended, I'll be fined, I'll be broke, because the nature of the game is about intimidation, not being illegal. It's about me imposing myself on you. My job is to stop you with the ball, and at all means necessary. I lift weights, I run heels, I do all those things so that I can be as strong, as fast, as powerful as I can. And that's the mentality typically of a good defensive player. Well, when you have the rule changes that now eliminates or minimizes your ability to put yourself out there and to dominate your area and your skills, your craft, because of not so much being, you know, player safety, but certain nuances of the game and things that's happened in the past, I think it really takes away. So I'm glad I don't play in this generation right now, because when I watch videos or I watch film or I'm, you know, about what I used to do, I really see, there's a fine. That would have got me out. That was, you know, I'll never forget. I mean, people remind me all the time. And when it was in 2005, the Green Bay hit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they fined me $75,000 for that hit. They wanted to suspend me for a full game, but that was the first time that it ever happened in that magnitude. So, you know, they just couldn't go straight from no nothing to suspension. So I wouldn't want to play in this era right now. I think offenses are crafty. Defenses are crafty as well. But it's fun for me to put my experience into the game through the lives of other people.
I would ask you if you were going for the ball in that situation, but it's a decade ago, Donovan.
I will rehash it, because here's the situation. This is the difference between being a professional athlete. As a professional athlete, right, at the top of your game, you see things that's happening real fast in a slow situation. Like, it slows down for you.
Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, Brett Favre threw the ball to Robert Ferguson. I was coming over, sprinting over to get him before the ball got there. But what happened was I took a right angle to perfectly intercept him. You know, not the ball, but just him. And when Brett Favre threw the ball high, it allowed him to slow down and jump up. So I almost overran him. And so what I did was, he had jumped up for the ball, hands fully extended. So I was going to come across his arms as they were fully extended,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, rake across his arms and knock the ball out. Well, what he did was, he pulled that ball down so fast that the area that I was raking across that was going to be his arms was his neck. And it happened as it did happen. I mean, mm-hmm. when you watch it full speed, you're like, oh my goodness, this guy tried to take his head off. No, I tried to take the ball out of his hand by going through his arms. But that's just the difference between when, like I said, when you're at that elite level, things slow down, even though they're happening really, really fast.
No, I remember the play very well. I remember
well too. I looked at my bank. What in the world?
Because I remember, you know, talking to a bunch of fans who, a lot of them were upset. They were like, Donovan's dirty. And I was like, well, let's see what Donovan has to say about it. Here, 10 years later, I get the true story out of you.
There you go. And then the fact is, and the people already know, when I got a chance to call Robert Ferguson at the hospital the next day and just check on him, and he told me straight up, he said, Donovan, I know you're not a dirty player, man. You know, I know it's part of the game, no matter what the consequences of the play was. And to me, at the end of the day, that meant more to me than any fine or any league or title or label that can come because of the result of that play.
Let's get out to the phone lines real quick. 641-1010. Gabe is up first here on Jaguars Today on a Thursday. How are you today, Gabe?
Doing awesome, man. Listen, guys, I really appreciate the opportunity to call here and the privilege to talk to Donovan for a little while. Donovan, you probably don't remember me. I've met you way back in the day. We're going to go back a few years. I'm the former property manager at the DuPont YMCA over on Old Kings Road, and I'm sure you got a couple of fond memories from there. But I coached the flag football leagues there for about 6 years, and those kids, my son and the other kids, there were 10 or 11 at the time. My son's now going to be 27 this year and has a new son of his own. But the memories that you instilled in me and all those kids, I remember driving the YMCA bus down with the Honor Road kids down there. But your integrity on and off the field, the mentorship that you gave these young kids. You never really met them in person, but they would talk about you every single practice and every single game. And I know that they're listening out there, if they're still around here in Jacksonville, I want you to be the first defensive player up there on the Pride, man. They say when it's all said and done and we meet our maker, it's not going to matter what kind of car we drove or how much money we made, but the point that we were important in the life of a child makes all the difference in the world. So, Donovan, they're going to like you upstairs, man, because you affected hundreds of these kids' lives. You've got their lives turned around the right direction. Thanks, man. Have a great day, and I'll listen to you off the air. Bye.
Man, I appreciate it. I thank you for the kind words. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, my gifts and talents that I realize, and I think, again, as a life coach and the things that I do at the NFL, and I'm always assessing life from the standpoint of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
We all have a purpose. And I get a chance to walk out my purpose every single day. It's just encouraging. It's pouring into us, equipping, educating, empowering people. And it's not a note to me for somebody to applaud me. It's like you said, hey, God has blessed me with gifts and talents, and we all have that. But once we find out where they need to be placed and what we need to be doing, it's not even work.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. A couple notable things on this date. 1991, March 19th in 1991, the NFL owners stripped Phoenix of the 1993 Super Bowl game due to Arizona not recognizing Martin Luther King Day. That was this date, 91. A couple of notable birthdays on this date. 1914, J.J. Berwanger. You may not know who that is. He was the first ever Heisman Trophy winner in 1935, was born on this date. In 1914, the notable NFL birthday on this date, 1970, Rick Meyer, the quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks and Chicago Bears, and that's what we have for you today on the This Date in Football History. At Best Fence, the mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Fencing is an investment in your home. Your family will feel protected, and you will breathe easier knowing Best Fence installed your new fence. Best Fence provides professional free estimates at your convenience. You can call them today at 904-268-1638. That's 904-268-1638. Or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. And that is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Dallas Cowboys have signed defensive end Greg Hardy to a one-year, $11.3 million deal that could be worth up to $13 million. An NFL spokesman told ESPN the league is still reviewing Hardy's situation as he could still be disciplined by the league office for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. The last full season that Hardy played, he tied a Panthers team record with 15 sacks and went to the Pro Bowl. The agent for Adrian Peterson says the Minnesota Vikings have no plans to release his client. Just a month ago, the 2012 MVP told ESPN he was uneasy about a return to the Vikings. AD turns 30 on Saturday. And hours after being arrested for a DUI, running back Bernard Pierce was released by the team. Pierce becomes the third Baltimore Raven to be released within 24 hours after an off-the-field incident. And Pierce pretty much knew his fate as he was en route to the precinct in the police car. He told officers, "Do you know what happened the last time a Ravens player got a DUI? I'm getting cut tomorrow. Not like you care." And that's all I have for the Honda driver on the NFL.
You know, the Ravens are no nonsense right now, and you can understand why with that whole situation with Ray Rice. And to a large degree, the NFL right now is a no-nonsense league, and that's why Greg Hardy is still waiting to hear from the NFL about what exactly is going to happen with him. And it's a convoluted situation, given that Greg Hardy was accused of what he was accused of, and we don't have to rehash the details, but it involved a woman and some domestic dispute and violence. And it went to a judge trial, and the judge declared him guilty. In the state of North Carolina, you automatically go to a jury trial, even if the judge finds you guilty. So he goes to a jury trial. The woman who he is accused of domestically violating in this situation doesn't show up, so there's not enough evidence against him for the trial to even go forward. So it gets dismissed. Mm-hmm. Now, the NFL is conducting its own investigation into what actually happened, what the punishment should be for Greg Hardy, which is why he's still officially on the NFL commissioner's exempt list as of this moment. there was a it was unclear whether any team was going to be willing to go after Greg Hardy until they found out what's going to happen, because there some suspension is expected. 4 games, 6 games, something is expected to come down the line for Greg Hardy. As a former player, how do you view guys running into the law as far as just coming back into your locker room after those types of problems?
Well, I mean, that's a tough situation, because again, I can't play judge and jury for anybody's personal situation. The only thing as a player that you can really chime in on is if and when those experiences or situations are hindering, you know, the team chemistry and the production on the field. Because at the end of the day, the NFL is one of those things where it's a forced friendships. Like, you don't get to know a person's background, their motivation, what they do, why they do what they do. You're being paid to come and do a job. And so, whereas you don't know everything that's coming with that person when they're on your team, coming to your team, you sure enough don't know everything that's going on with them while they're on your team. And so as a player, that wouldn't be something that I can kind of chime in on. I would see if there's anything I can do to support, but I do say a couple of things. Number one, the league is kind of having a no tolerance policy, which I think is good. It's not saying it's unfair to the league, because the league is in the business of making the number one sport in the world the biggest sport. And they're not a babysitting league. They're not a domestic violence or substance abuse. They're not there to police and jury those things, although they got to monitor them for the brand and protect his reputation. And so as a player, it's one of those things that you just try to see, what can I do to support? But when you get on the field and you're out there, whether it's in practice, training, or whatever it is, all you really your main concern is, are we here together? Do we understand why we're here on this field? And can we accomplish what we need to do? After that's over, you can kind of go your way, and you can make the necessary steps to develop a friendship, to develop a relationship. But as a player, that would be outside of the authority that I would have to direct with that, you know, I mean, to deal with that directly.
Sure. As a former player in this organization, a member of this community in this city, would you have wanted the Jaguars to bring in a player with that kind of baggage like Greg Hardy to the organization?
I mean, he's in a situation with domestic violence. I think a lot of people know, or if they don't know, growing up and when I was young, I mean, we found ourselves, and one of the stories in my life of overcoming accomplishment is that we were in a situation with domestic violence in our home, two different times. And when I say two different times, I mean, two different times we went to domestic violence shelters. And my mom was such an advocate of support for women and families that she had worked at Hubbard House here in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand how critical and how emotional and how impactful those situations are. So I'm very sensitive around those areas, because there's families that are being impacted. Similar to the whole thing with like Ray Rice, Greg Hardy, I'm not looking so much at just the incident. I want to look at the person that you were, the two individuals, the one that's performing it and the one that's being a victim of it, because there's a mentality that's causing a person to do that. There is an attitude, there is a mindset, there is a lack of development. And whether that person makes a sack, scores a touchdown, gets an interception, I can care less about that. What I care about is, how is this person going to be able to survive in life? How are they going to be able to make it through life? And what are the skills or lack thereof that they have that they need to be developed, you know, so that they can have a successful life? And so as pertains to bringing them here or not, I just think that whatever his future holds for him, I just hope that he finds ways to get support for his coping mechanisms as it comes to conflict and stress.
The league has never had to juggle as many big issues publicly as it's having to do right now, whether it be domestic violence or the head injury issues with concussions, the long-term impacts of that on the National Football League, just everything that goes on with now you are the most popular league in this country, and with that comes the public scrutiny on everybody. It doesn't matter what level of trouble a player gets into. It's Roger Goodell standing up and saying that he wants to protect the shield and these new things that he's put in place. The players complaining about how much power he has over those things. The league's never had so much to juggle as it does right now. How do you feel like, what kind of job do you feel like they're doing with all of these different things right now?
I think that we live in a different society and generation with the advent of social media, with everything being publicized right away. It's not that these issues that they're dealing with now are totally new.
No.
It's just that when they're happening, they're now being publicized and everybody's being made aware. Everyone can have their own opinion. And a lot of times you only get one chance to, you know, one chance to make a first impression. And so when your name is out there for something negative, whether it's a team, organization, an individual, it can become very hard to recoup, you know, the reputation. I think that's for everybody. It pertains to grading the league on what they're doing. It's almost like they have to a degree, react. They're reacting versus responding. Responding allows you to plan ahead of time, and then when it happens, you just implement those steps. They're reacting from a standpoint because what we saw last year with the suspensions and then additional suspensions, it kind of caught them off guard that these things were going to have the weight that they were going to have. Not that they weren't happening before, but now with everything, with the generation of athletes we have, with the advent of social media, everything is out there. And so I never believed that the NFL should have to babysit and police all these social issues. But as a business, they have to protect their brand. So what they're going to do in that case is they're trying to equip the organizations, they're trying to equip the teams, the players with these resources. And I think for that, that is a plus on the brand as a whole, something that I wanted to protect for a long time as well. Now, nobody's perfect. We all made mistakes. Think about it. Everybody listening to this phone call, if you got caught with the one situation, you know, that you got away with the way it happened, I mean, we all would have sympathy or empathy to what goes on. But we live in a generation where sports and entertainment is one of the number one industries out there. And guys coming into the league has to understand it's a privilege.
No, it is. And look, the NFL, like I said, it's got a lot that it's trying to handle right now, away from the field as well as on it. And the issues that they have on the field right now, kind of a reflection of that this week, and Chris Borland stepping away at the age of 24. I want to get your thoughts on that. 641-1010 if you want to get involved in the program as well. The fan feedback spotlight today, we're asking you, Jaguars fans, brought to you by the Tom Butch family of dealerships, what drives you? Today we want to know, who should be the first defensive player in the pride of the Jaguars? Who should be the first defensive player in the pride of the Jaguars? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at Donovan Darius, at 1010XL Tyler, and of course on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars today. We'll talk about Borland and the impact that knowing some of the repercussions for head injuries is having on the National Football League right now with former player Donovan Darius as we continue on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Well, I think it was a culmination of a number of things. It's a unique decision to me. I'd done a lot of research of what I had experienced in my past, projected to what I would have to do to be the linebacker I wanted to be. And for me, it wasn't worth the risk. Not to say it's a certainty. I could be wrong. I hope I'm not. I hope I am wrong, honestly. But for me, it was the right decision.
Now, former San Francisco 49ers linebacker Chris Borland's comments there, going into a little more detail on why he decided to step away from the game again at the age of 24 and going to be given the opportunity to start the National Football League. You got to figure that's something he's been dreaming about for a long time, and here it is, and he's stepping away from the game. Donovan Darius alongside. I'm Fat Tony. Mike Dempsey on vacation this week. He'll be back with us next week starting on Monday. Happy tournament day, everybody, as March Madness really gets rolling today. A darn shame last night for the UNF Ospreys. We haven't talked about it yet today, but watch that game, and it felt like they had it for long stretches, especially going into the halftime. They made that run coming out of the half, Donovan, got that 13-point lead. And as I said on Twitter last night, it felt like Robert Morris switched to southpaw in the middle of a fight, and UNF just didn't have an answer for it when they switched up the way they were playing defense, and UNF started turning the ball over like crazy and wind up losing the game, but still a really cool story. And I know a lot of Jacksonville was watching UNF basketball for the first time, so cool for them to get that kind of exposure on a local and national level.
Yeah, I just want to say congratulations, too, man, to the Ospreys to make it, even just to get your foot in the door to – you know, it can kind of whet the taste in your mouth for other people coming, for recruiting, for the organization as a whole. I mean, hard work pays off. And so for them to get that far, of course, I didn't get a chance to see the game because I was traveling. But what I did see when I saw the ticker taper say, hey, Robert Morrissey versus Duke, it let me know that they had lost. But again, congratulations to UNF and to everything that they accomplished up to this point. It's definitely an opportunity for them to grow from this, and they can go down now in history to say, hey, for those guys that's playing, we did that.
We were the first.
We accomplished that. Exactly. Yep. So
we were the first, and there's always something special about being the first to do anything. Coach Matt Driscoll, one of my favorite people in Jacksonville, and if you've ever had the pleasure of meeting that guy, you know why. He is so energetic with what he brings every single day. It's been a pleasure to cover him for the last handful of years. We want to get out to the phone lines, talk a little bit about this Chris Borland situation with you, Donovan. So let's get to it. 641-1010. Let's talk to Nick up next here on Jaguars Today. Hey, Nick.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well.
I heard a couple of comments the other day on your station by one of the hosts that I was really disappointed in. When it comes to the retirement of Chris Borland, the linebacker, I guess, in San Francisco. And basically what the personality was saying was basically that he was a quitter and that he quit on his team. And I just want to say that, you know, the NFL is a business. The San Francisco 49ers are a corporation. And, you know, this guy doesn't owe to insinuate that this guy owes his health to a company is a plantation mentality that has really no place in the marketplace of ideas. And if we're looking for somebody who quit, I think the NFL has quit on the players because, you know, for a long time, you know, there was that documentary League of Denial out there. The NFL basically denied that there was a problem. They tried to hide it and cover it up with head injuries in the NFL. And you know, and to me, they've done a little bit with the rules changes, but they haven't done enough for safety. So I think the NFL quit on Chris Borland, and I'd like to get your comments. Thank you.
All right, Nick, appreciate the call. Look, a lot to dig into with that. I think, and we've been talking about this for a couple days now, Donovan, I go back to the analogy of a boxer in a ring. We were just talking about boxing, during the break a little bit there, but I go back to that analogy of when you see a guy stop in the middle of a fight, you know, he takes that knee and he waves that hand. He says, I can't go anymore. I'm done with this. I think that there is a tendency as a fan of the fight game, right? You see that guy do that, you go, why'd he step into the ring if he didn't have the heart to finish this fight in the first place? He knew what the risk was of stepping into that ring, what could potentially happen to him, right? When he stepped into the ring and you call that guy a quitter. He quit. He quit on himself. He quit on his corner in that fight, right? That's the fan in me that says that. The person in me, the man in me, when I think about it rationally, I go, I'm with you, man. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get punched in the head anymore either if I don't have to be, right? I get that side of it too. You know, I think it's one of these weird situations where I don't know that there's a right answer. I think Chris Borland did what was right for him. And I think fans getting upset about the way that Chris Borland's gone out at the age of 24, going into his second year in the league as a potential starter now for the San Francisco 49ers, their level of frustration is completely understandable as well. I don't know, as a former player, when you look at a situation like that, what is your gut reaction to somebody stepping away from the game at the age of 24?
Well, I mean, I appreciate the call, Nick. There's a certain part of what I agree with what you said as pertains to the business of sports. I totally agree with that. And as a player, you're making an executive decision for your life and for your health and for the risk and rewards that come with playing in the National Football League. And I think at any time, it's up to you to make a decision in terms of how you approach the game, what do you do during a game, and then also what are the steps you take beyond the game. And so in his situation, he walked the path of college to the NFL, and he got to a point where what I like about his interview and what he said, and hopefully that people really listen to it, he said it was a personal decision. He did his research. After he looked at everything, this is not for everybody, but this is what he saw. So he's making an executive decision. We often talk about that being in the NFL, you are a CEO of your brand. Mm-hmm. And that brand is your individual personality and person in the name of your jersey. And so when you make a decision to do the right things in this game, it can at a lot of times reap the benefits. When you make the decision to do the wrong things, as we see in news with guys getting in trouble with the law, then again, you're making an executive decision for your brand. And so for Chris Borland to, for whatever the reasons are that he decided, I want to move forward. I want to go on a different path. And whatever it may be, we also often talk about when guys finish the game and they say, when you don't want to play, well, when you don't want to, for me, and then for a lot of guys share the same thing, when you don't want to prepare the way that to do what it takes during the off season, or your heart is not into the game, or you're out there thinking about something that's not allowing you to be emotionally, physically, mentally present, then you need to look at the decision in terms of transitioning and moving forward into whatever this next step is. And so for Chris Borland, did he quit? No, he didn't quit. He just made an executive decision for his life, his career, you know, for his future, and it just happened to be because of something he dealt with. Let's say another person, you know, that's not playing football, but they're having an executive position with an organization, and they're having family situations, domestic situations, their children are now sick. And being part of that organization takes time away from the family. It's causing them stress. They can't do the job that they're supposed to do at the highest level. And they make a decision. I got to put my letter of resignation in. I got some personal issues I want to deal with. That's all he did. We hear this and see this every single day. Like we said earlier, it's just because this issue has been at the forefront of our mind and our understanding and in the news that people look at it as such as a major thing. But he just made a situation, an executive decision. Now, and when I played, you know, did I have concussions? Yeah, I experienced concussions. But we were talking about earlier, we were saying, hey, when you get into the league, there are inherent risk with anything and everything you do. What you're doing is you're taking a calculated understanding of that and decision, and you're going forward. Would you do it again if you had to do it again? I sure enough would. There's calculated risk in everything. But also, what am I doing on the other side? I'm also getting myself the information that I need to know what I need to do it properly and how can I go out and effectively. And now the part that I disagree with what Nick has said was as pertains to that the NFL quit. The NFL didn't quit on anybody. This is what has happened, and what we were talking about off the air is when they're seeing that they're holding all this information back, who is the subjective doctor in funding this investigation to find out what were they holding back? The NFL is not going to do it. You know, the NFLPA is not going to do it. And so what interest group is benefiting from them saying, meaning the NFL, is holding back information for the players, you know what I mean, to, you know, that they intentionally held back information. I don't think that it may go as far as guys may think. I think the lawyers are going to get paid a lot of money. I think there's going to be guys on the other side that say, hey, I want to benefit from this lawsuit or and different things like that. But I think they're going to come to the realization that at the end of the day, we all made those executive decisions for ourselves. And if given a chance to do it again for the risk and reward, I think guys would do the same exact thing.
No, I think so, too. And I think that whatever information the NFL had, whenever they had it, needed to be made available to the players is my only point. And I don't know when they had any information.
So let me ask you this. So is it a matter of presenting the risk, you know, presenting the information, the risks that are associated with it? For example, should they also say, playing in the National Football League, You may find yourself going through a year, 3 to 4 or 5 year transition where you feel like you don't know what's going on. You know, your family situation may be a little bit hectic. You know what I'm saying? There's, you know, going to be, you may have some frustration. You might have the five stages of loss and grief. You may go through that stuff and you may not know what to do. Like, should there be presentations on all those things? Now, I will say, as being part of the league in this generation and what I do with the NFL Legends community and what I do as an NFL certified life coach, I'm doing those things right now, so I have a personal experience of the steps that's being taken to deal with rookies coming in, to work with the development directors of player engagement for guys that are playing, and then work with guys when they leave. So I see what we're doing. So I wouldn't say that they're quitting. I just say that, hey, there's information out there, and it's all about how you present it.
Yeah, I think if they have those kind of things, they need to make players aware. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily need to be everybody at the same time. Maybe it is a situational basis where this player is obviously dealing with some of these things. The NFL can step in when they need to with that kind of thing. I think we were talking about specifically the head issues, the concussion issues, the shots they give players toward all those kinds of things that have been talked about over the past several years. Look, I am totally with you. I think that 99.9% of the guys that are in this league, that if you set them down before they got into the NFL and said, you know, this is the risk that you were at for concussions, these are the long-term repercussions for what these head injuries could do for you or to you, these are the risk of taking this shot, it'll get you back on the field, but this is what could happen to you down the line. I think 99.9% of guys would say, what do I have to do? Where do I sign? Give me the shot. Put me back on the field. I'm playing the game. I think that most of them would. I think it's that 0.1%, like the Chris Borland, that decides to walk away. I don't think he needs to necessarily be vilified for making that decision either, if he's making it in the best interest of himself and what he feels like is best for his family going forward. I don't think he needs to be made the villain in that type of situation. A lot has been made this week of he didn't have any more information, you know, going into his second year in the league than he did coming out of college and making the decision to play in the NFL. What was the difference from a physical level going from Syracuse to your first year in the NFL? How much more physical and fast was the game, the impact it had on you physically coming into the league?
I mean, there is definitely a transition. I mean, number one, on a college team, there may be about five guys only that are really good or that are great, that are elite players. But when you get to the league, everybody's like that. Everybody is fast. And so the speed of the game changes. And then there are certain components of your game that change. Like, for example, the angles that you now have to take. Well, I might have been able to take this angle to run to a receiver or a running back. That's because he was at a collegiate level of speed. Mm-hmm. Versus when I get to the league and every running back is 4.4 and 4.3 and I'm running 4.4 myself, I have to take a different angle now. And so the speed really changes. Now also you have the collisions. Now these guys are trained with their hands. They're trained with their shoulders. They're trained with their feet, how to step to contact, how to do these things properly. And so collisions can be a little harder, but at the same time, that growth and progression of understanding fundamentals, you also can do it smarter. So where in college you have those old plays where guys are just ramming into each other, that's not happening as much as in the NFL. I was always surprised with the higher you go in football, the less pads you have on. When you're playing Pop Warner, man, you have every pad on. In high school, you had every pad on. You had hip pad, you know, knee pad, butt pad. You know, you had everything on, rib pads. But when you got to college, it slimmed down. But when I got into the league, I had shoulder pads on and a helmet. And I didn't really have anything on my legs. Like, because you learn how to play within yourself, how to have good body position, use your hands. And so now you're not having those different type of just collision things. So I think as you progress and you transition, you grow and you learn with fundamentals and techniques that help longevity.
Sure. And for you personally, before we get into the fan feedback spotlight here in just a moment, you talked about some concussions you suffered during your career. Did you ever consider the long-term ramifications of that to the point where you were like, maybe it is time for me to walk away from the game? Was that ever even a consideration for you?
Well, I mean, yes and no. Yes, from the standpoint, again, is that when you have a concussion and you're under that concussed state, you don't think like, oh, I want to do it again. You think about, well, am I okay? What do I need to do to get beyond this? You rely on the trainers and the doctors to give you the guidance along with the information that you have. And then the no part is you start to understand that this is a component of it, this can be a component of it or a risk associated with it. And when you feel and you see yourself come back and you're under normal faculties and you kind of go from there, mm-hmm. it gives you the confidence to know that any situation is not life-threatening. But it is something that you just have to consider and you have to kind of maintain and work with it.
So once you got healthy again, there was never a consideration for you?
No, it wasn't. And that's why even now it's great. I mean, I thank God. I love my life from the standpoint that I went into the league. I played as long as I did, had a career that I was blessed to have, and then I transitioned out. And so I transitioned out. I experienced all these things. Now I can talk to parents. I can talk to athletes. I can talk to players from a standpoint of I was there. I know what it's like. So the whole tackling thing, football has went up. Was it 8% or so from 2 years ago to last year? And a lot of it has to do with education. And so I do like tackling clinics and teach people how to do it. Because now, like you said earlier, if you have the information, you know, you have the motivation, you have the inspiration, then you can have the application. Now you can put it to work and it can work for you and you can be out there with confidence versus being out there in fear.
We're talking to Donovan Darius. We got the fan feedback spotlight coming up. If you want to get in on the spotlight today, you can at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Donovan Darius, at 1010XL Tyler, and on Jaguars Today on our Facebook page on facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We're asking you who should be the first Jaguars defensive player in the pride of the Jaguars. With Donovan Darius sitting across from me, Mike Dempsey on vacation, I'm Fat Tony, Donovan Darius across. We'll get into the fan feedback spotlight here in just a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Oh, it's been fun today. Double D, Donovan Darius here with me, Mike Dempsey on vacation, I'm Fat Tony. On a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today, the NCAA tournament getting started here in Jacksonville in a little under 2 hours over there at the arena. And I'm sure the boys of XL Primetime who are coming up next will have you covered for everything going on with the NCAA tournament, including reaction to UNF being eliminated from the field last night. The fan feedback spotlight question of the day, Tom Bush Family of Dealerships asked Jaguars fans, what drives you? Today in the Tom Bush fan feedback spotlight, we asked who should be the first Jaguars defensive player put into the pride of the Jaguars. Some of the answers we got from David, this is an easy one, Joel Schmingy or Donovan Darius. From Scott, I hate to throw a current name out there, but I'd say Puzz, a strong team attitude and a good player. From Bobby, Tony Brackens, if for no other reason then we're still looking for another double-digit sack guy. They got one, Bobby. We got one. Bobby McCray got 10 one season. That's it. That's the end of that list. From Michael, we got, yup, it's Rasheen, in my opinion, linked breadth of career and big moments, specifically those Pittsburgh games. From Duval Doom, he said, got to go with Rasheen. From Isaiah, Marcus Stroud. From Steve, we got Tony Brackens. From the Duke of Duval, Tony Brackens comes to mind, still looking for his replacement after all these years. From Paolo, he said, nobody deserves it yet. Hopefully one of the draft picks from the last 2 years will make it. That's some of the responses we got today. I think the Stroud one's interesting, and I talked with you about this, Donovan. I feel more like if Stroud's going to go in, it's kind of a Stroud and Henderson thing. I could see both of them being potentially brought into the pride of the Jaguars, but not one or the other. And the guys I always debate with this, you're thrown in there, Tony Brackens and Rasheen Mathis. Brackens, because he is the franchise's all-time sack leader, and they haven't found anybody that can do it the way he does. And again, Rasheen just feels like a guy who, because of the last couple years here, there was so little around him in that secondary that I think fans have a sour taste in their mouth of him as a player, but I think he's the best corner this team has ever seen.
I mean, I guess at the end of the day, you know, nobody's really defined exactly what are the parameters to get there. I mean,
nope.
And until you do that, it makes it hard. It makes it hard, and you're always going to be divided in terms of who should go on the wall and who not. I mean, when I was asked about this, I said Tony Brackens for the reasons stated earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, Rasheen, he just signed with Detroit again. I mean, there's so many guys on the defense that, you know, I think that can be up there. But for me, when people ask me, this is my answer, and hope you're listening. I do not want to be on a wall. I'd rather be in your heart than on the wall, because you could take me off that wall with the letters. But if I'm in a person's mind and memory and all that, then it means that I have made a personal sacrifice to do something and allow you to remember me by. And so that matters to me. And I know for fans here, you know, some people are so divided with who goes up there. But I think that the organization is on a turnaround. I think, you know, kind of wrap everything up with free agency and stuff, with the guys we're bringing in now, the team chemistry, the growth of the team. I think that I'm excited about the great things that's coming.
I know fans out there get jealous of Mike and I and the opportunities we have to sit down with guys like you. We have David Garrard in once a week. Last week we had all six of those free agents at the Jaguars sign come through here and get to meet and talk to those guys. My favorite part of it is to talk to former players like yourself, the chance to talk to guys like Jeff Lagerman on a weekly basis and get y'all's perspective on the game and see how active you guys are in Jacksonville. I mean, it's incredible watching all these guys who I watched as a kid play the game that decided to stick around here, aren't from here, but decided this is what they're going to make home is Jacksonville. Nobody does more for their community from that standpoint than you do, Donovan. I it's incredible. Every time I talk to you, the list of things you have to go through that you are doing at different places. I know you got the moms and families deal coming up in May. I think you said May 9th that they can go sign up for that, and you have a camp tomorrow for kids. Just let everybody know one more time where they need to go to get signed up for these things.
Yeah, so actually this week this will be my third spring break football camp for youth ages 6 to 15. It's going to be out there at Plantation Park in Fruit Cove, Florida, right off of Racetrack Road. Again, we're going to be working on everything from speed, agility to offense position, defense position, technique, fundamentals, football games. We have a lot of races. We have a lot of competition. It's just a great experience. A lot of things into a short amount of time. I am told I love what I do. And so parents can definitely sign up their children. They can go to DariusNextLevelTraining.com and they can sign them up. Again, there's still room. I love to have them come out. And then also the other event we were talking about for my foundation, my totally free event. I do life camps at the Jaguar Stadium, about 5 to 7 of them a year. Well, my next one coming up is for mothers and children. It's called Understanding and Appreciating the Powers of Mothers. And so mothers will be able to come along with their children ages 5 to 18, 2 hours basically of empowerment with people I have coming in to build them up and encourage them in just different areas as they engage, as well as the kids will get a chance to do stuff. Then we go on to practice fields and have a lot of fun competition. Want to give a shout out to my beautiful wife, Allison, who's listening right now, and she'll be there as well. And again, we just have a whole lot of things going on. And then Father's Day Life Camp, June 20th, will be at the Jaguar Stadium. And so those things are all available, DonovanDariusFoundation.com, if they want to sign up for any of those events. Or you can email me, contact@DonovanDarius.com. I look forward to it.
So Plantation Park tomorrow for the spring break football camp. They can go to DariusNextLevelTraining.com if you got a kid who's been running around all week on spring break and you just want to hand them off to somebody for a couple of hours.
It's like Double D daycare, you know what I'm saying?
Tomorrow's the day to do it. Let them run around, play a little football, and learn it the right way with Donovan Darius. Donovan, always a pleasure to have you in here. I so much enjoy the conversation for 2 hours just talking football, man.
I enjoy it, man. You guys be good.
Thank you very much. That's Donovan Darius, Mike Dempsey on vacation. I'm Fat Tony. The boys of XL Primetime, they're coming up next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.